This is the Concealed Carry Podcast, episode number 28. Welcome to the Concealed Carry Podcast, part of the USA Firearm Training Network. And I am your host, Riley Bowman.
Riley, the man who really, really likes dill pickle flavored sunflower seeds. I am Jacob Paulson.
And Jacob is the guy who has more security cameras than TVs in his house.
Now, if I had TVs, all I'd be watching is the security cameras.
Isn't that the truth? I know you. Oh, come on. You probably have two TVs in your house.
There's three right now. Yeah.
Oh, you surprised me.
There's a workout room TV. Yeah.
And by the way, Jacob just moved into a new house. Congrats.
Yay.
Yay. That was a process.
No kidding.
Yeah. And did you close on your old house as far as the sale of it yesterday?
Sold yesterday. Done. I now only own the one home.
Cool. Good for you. Yes. And not only do I like dill pickle flavored sunflower seeds, but I specifically, and I have them right here. Biggs dill pickle Vlasic brand.
That sounds awful.
I ate about a pound of them last weekend as I was traveling out of town for a funeral and back. Yum, yum. So, today's topic. I stopped a stabbing in Detroit. Ooh.
That's hot.
Yeah. It really is. Today we are so excited to feature the story of a man who successfully stopped a brutal attack on a woman when he decided to step in, draw his gun, and put an end to it. And not in the way you might think. Not only do we have the story, but we have the full interview that we were privileged to have with him. He is not granted this kind of access to anybody else, and so we are so thrilled to bring this directly to you, our loyal listeners. All this and much more coming up on the Concealed Carry Podcast. But first, today's episode is featuring the American Gun Law Course. This online training course about everything gun law related will prepare you legally for much less money than an hour's worth of your local attorney, which is very appropriate considering the story that we are going to share today. Much more information coming up later in the podcast. And so without really any further waiting or delay, let's get into it. Okay, on the line with us today, we've got Daryl Paco Sarter with us. Hello, sir.
How you doing?
We are great. Jacob, you know, we were so excited to finally get him on the phone with us for an interview. We actually reached out to him probably back in February.
Yeah, I think so. Yeah.
Pretty soon after, you know, he had his incident. And he was like, "Oh, I'd be happy to talk, but, you know, give me some time." Right?
Yeah.
Well, I think we wanted to respect these kinds of things sometimes. Just need to let the media die down a little bit.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely. But, you know, we're so excited, Daryl, that you're finally willing to get on with us and tell your story because, honestly, sir, you have a remarkable story.
Thank you. Thank you, Riley.
So, why don't we jump right into it here? So we got some questions for you, but I think where we want to kind of start is, you know, why don't you tell us a little bit about yourself first? Just like, who is Daryl Paco Sarter? What do you kind of do for a living? Hobbies, whatever. You know, just who are you, sir?
Okay. So my name is Daryl Sarter. A lot of people have a hard time saying that name. So since probably the sixth grade, for some reason, I don't know how the name came, Paco came, and it just carried on. High school yearbooks, everything has Paco on it. You know, I've been in the parking industry basically half my life, almost 17 years now. So I got a promotion to go start the valet operation at the GM Tech Center, which, you know, that building's been around for, I don't know, 50 plus years, but they've never had a valet system.
Yeah.
So I moved over there in December from my current location, which was a private club in downtown Detroit. So we moved there in December.
Tell us a little bit about your family, Paco. Married, kids?
Married, 10 years now, two kids. Got a 9-year-old girl, six-year-old boy. Like I was born awesome. Here in Detroit, and my wife's from New York City. So,
cool.
Yeah.
Awesome. I see, you know, we've connected with you on Facebook, and you got some cute kids, some beautiful kids, beautiful wife. I think you have an affinity for cigars too.
Yeah, it's something new I picked up, like where I hang out downtown, La Casa Cigars. You know, it's a great environment. I like sports a lot. That's my passion, my hobby. I love sports. All type of sports, all the way from football to basketball to even women's tennis. You know, I watch it all. So, and that's a great cool. place to watch it, you know, the atmosphere and everything, you know, and they got great cigars.
and by the way, you have one of the most awesome beards I've ever seen.
Oh, thank you, man.
It's pretty impressive.
He sports a mean beard, that's for sure.
A lot of people call me James Harden when I'm out on the streets.
Yeah, I could definitely see the resemblance. Cool. So let's go back to this fateful day. And here's kind of how we wanted to share and communicate this story. Paco, we'd like to hear you kind of start, you know, and you know what day we're referring to. Why don't you start for us? Tell us, you know, what's your usual daily routine like, and what was... I guess the, you know, how did your day go as far as that day, that morning or whatever, getting ready for work, getting to work? Let's just start right at the very beginning. Lay it out for us in kind of a story form, if you would.
Yeah, so this day started off unusual right from the get-go because my shift usually starts, I work 10 a.m. to 6 p.m. But this day I was called in, I talked to my manager, we had an issue. You know, so we're like, she's like, why don't you come in an hour early and, you know, we'll settle this and then you can start your shift at 10. So that day I went in at 9 o'clock and I had my, you know, shirt and tie and hoodie on. So, you know, it's hot days here, it's hard to conceal. So I had my hoodie on, so I still had my firearm on me. So we're in the office, you know, having our meeting and all of a sudden I see all these valet guys come knocking on the door. Hey, we need help. We need help. And yeah. I thought it was some of our valet guys getting into it, which either, you know how it is with that kind of stuff. So as I run out there, I just see it's like mass hysteria. People are running towards me, you know?
Mm. So I'm like, people are running away from something.
Yeah.
In other words. Yeah, before you go any further, would you explain the 10 minutes leading up to this incident as far as, you know, Were things kind of going normally, other than the fact you actually had to go into work a little bit earlier than usual? But was it just kind of a normal day for you, other than that?
Yeah, just a normal day, you know. Nothing out of the ordinary besides just having to go in early.
Uh-huh. You
know. Talk a little bit, Paco, about, you know, you mentioned you wore a hoodie so that you could continue to carry concealed. How long have you been, you know, carrying a concealed gun up to this point? I mean, is it years? Is it fairly new? You know, talk a little bit about your history with concealed carry.
I've been carrying for right now for about 6 years. I took my class with a 12-year Marine. You know, people always say, a lot of my friends are very anti-gun, or they say, why do you need a gun? When will you ever have to use your gun? And, you know, and I always told him, like, if I can go 30 years, 40 years, shit, my whole life without ever having to pull it out, then it did its job. But I would rather have it, you know, and not need it than need it and not have it, you know?
That's one of my favorite sayings. So I definitely relate to that. So you were carrying your gun that day. Is that pretty normal then? Do you carry on a daily basis?
I have it. I never leave the house without it, but a lot of times when I get to work, I leave it in my truck.
Okay. And was there a reason you didn't leave it in your truck that day?
Well, my thing was I was going to go in an hour early, have a quick meeting. I had my hoodie, which was concealing it, and then I was going to just take off and go have breakfast or somewhere and then start my shift later, you know?
Huh. That's really interesting.
So if it hadn't been for that meeting, yeah, you might not have had your gun with you in that moment.
Exactly, yeah. So that's what I said. It was very odd. Like, we had to have an issue the day before for me to be called in, for me to go, for me to wear the hoodie and decide, hey, you know, I'm not going to ankle holster it or anything. I'm just going to just keep it right there.
Wow. Okay, so back to kind of you're sitting. You said you're sitting in the office, and some of your valet guys they run over to the office and they're trying to get your attention. Is that what was going on?
Yeah, they're like, "We need help. We need help."
Wow. So walk us through, you know, kind of moment by moment. What happens next?
So I come out, and this natural instinct is to run, you know. So I ran towards where I'm following them. They're just like, "We need help." So as soon as I open the door, and I'm running towards them, and maybe 15 to 20 feet before I hit the exit of the door, I can hear, you know, her saying, "Bitch, you dead. Bitch, you dead," if you want to go quote for quote. And you can just see this woman just getting attacked, you know. And before I even hit the exit doors, I was already unholstering my firearm, maybe, you know, 5 seconds before. And as soon as I got in my stance, I kept my distance, and I pointed right at her and said as loudly as I could, you know, "If you want quote, drop the knife or I'll shoot." And she literally dropped it and backed away right away. And that's when other people decided to exit the door, and they moved the knife away. And that's when once the knife was out of her hands and she backed away and the knife was secured, I holstered my firearm right away and called 911.
Okay. So, go ahead, Jacob.
I was going to say, like, Paco, did you first hear or did you first see the lady?
I heard the "bitch, you dead."
Yeah, so you're hearing that sound, and then what did you see? Like, give us, like, paint the picture of what you were seeing.
And big woman, just knife had to be 8 inches.
Was this like a kitchen knife?
Yeah, it was one of those long kitchen knives.
Mm.
And you can just see her. She was going at like a circular motion, you know?
Hmm.
Yeah. Wow. And what about the victim? Where was the victim?
At that point, by the time I got out, she was on the ground.
Yeah. Could you tell us, just because it may not be clear to the listeners, who are these two women and what's their relation?
The next day I found out they're mother and daughter.
Yeah.
Mother and daughter.
Yeah, mother's the victim, daughter's the perpetrator, right?
And daughter of the perpetrator, yeah. And like, if you've seen the footage they released, she walked in, went to the security, had her mother call down, and then they walked out, and, you know, she had her hands behind her back the whole time, and then as soon as she went outside, she just went to town on her.
Wow. Do you know, by chance, you know, why, you know, the daughter was provoked to or motivated to attack her mother in this way?
No, not at all.
Yeah. That's crazy.
Let me ask you, like, at that point, like, you're hearing the screaming, people are running, you catch a visual and you start going for your gun. Like, what was going through your mind at that moment? Like, do you have any memory of, like, your feelings or your thoughts in that moment?
No, actually, I mean, I didn't have any thoughts. It was just, someone's dying. I got to do something, you know?
It's just instinct. Would that be a good description?
It was instinct. It was adrenaline. And, you know, I mean, I don't really, it's tough, man. That's why, like, when you guys first wanted to even take me on right after that, like, I was shaken up after. I wasn't shaken up at the moment. It was, like, after, when I really thought about it, like, you know, what bugged me, like, man, what if she didn't drop that knife, you know? Like, I would have a fire on her, you know?
Wow.
Yeah. Yeah.
And it was the first time, like I said, in 6 years, the first time I've ever had to unholster it with a threat. And, you know, all these years you carry and you're always thinking you're saving it for you or your family's protection. And, like, the last thing that came, like, the first time I would have to ever pull it out was to save someone else, you know, or help someone else.
Right. Yeah. Crazy. What, you know, so you've got her at gunpoint. She's dropped the knife at this point. Is that right?
Yeah. She dropped the knife and backed away.
And she's just kind of standing there or whatever.
Yeah. There's some, a few other guys came in and they were, you know, once a night, that time security ended up coming out and, securing the weapon, the knife.
Gotcha.
And,
are these armed security or unarmed?
Unarmed.
Okay. And who called authorities, 911?
I did.
You did. Okay. So at this point, did you place that call?
I'm sure other people, as the attack was happening, people were probably calling as well.
Okay. Would you mind describing that 911 call for us? And also, when did you actually place the call? Was it once you had her, she was kind of secured, your gun's still out? Is that when it happened, or was it before that?
No, after she dropped the knife, the knife was secured. Then I holstered my weapon and called 911.
Okay.
I didn't want to have my gun out there. Then all of a sudden, someone that's not familiar with the situation would, in panic mode, right, will see me with the gun, and then
sure,
I think that I'm the aggressor.
Yeah. I'm actually quite impressed that you had the presence of mind to think that and to do that at the moment. So very interesting. And so then you called 911, and what did that go like?
Warren City Police were amazing. They were there quickly as possible, and you can see them as soon as they came in. They order her, because she seemed crazy. She just stood there, waited for them, and they put her on the ground. They handcuffed her, and at that time, I'm watching the stuff. I kind of stepped away a little bit to smoke a cigarette, because my heart was still pumping. I needed to calm myself down.
Yeah, you were experiencing the after effects, really, right, of all that adrenaline and everything. So now the mother, she's on the ground, right? She's wounded, I presume, a number of times.
Yeah, from what I heard, she was stabbed 9 times.
Wow.
The back, the neck, and the stomach. But she was attended to. I got to give it to some of the medics. They as soon as the knife, she dropped the knife and it was secured, that's when people came out and people attended to her. The medics attended to her fairly quickly.
That's good. And she's pulled through, right?
She's pulled through. She was in the hospital, I believe, for about a week, and then she was released home.
Wow.
That's huge.
Yeah.
And, was there, in that moment, when you went for the, when you went to draw your gun and you put it on target, was there any fear? Like, do you remember feeling any sense of fear?
No.
I'm trying to imagine the feeling and the sense and the thought. And the biggest thing I'm getting from you is that it just felt instinctive. It was like there was a cue in your environment and you reacted. And that, that's kind of what I'm getting. Does that sound like a good summary?
That sounds exactly what happened. Like, I would say if someone said, give me a time frame to make the decision, and from making the decision to putting your hand on your gun, I would say less than half a second. That's all I had to react,
Wow.
Yeah.
Now I got to ask a question just because I'm curious, because you referenced, drawing a gun. Not that this really matters, but it's Riley and I'm a gun guy. So I'm curious, what were you carrying?
That day I had my 38 Special Smith & Wesson.
Oh, really? Okay. So little J-frame revolver?
Yep, that's exactly what it is.
Five shots. What kind of load were you carrying?
Regular, man, regular.
Yeah? Cool. Go ahead.
I was going to ask, I'm curious to hear a little bit about your own personal, I'll call it physical recovery. Like after this moment, you talked about your heart racing, smoked a cigarette to calm down. As I recall, some of the media reported that you were escorted off as well to the hospital to kind of be checked out. Like, talk a little bit about leaving the emotion and mental out of it for now. Like, just physically, was it traumatic? I mean, did it take quite a while to calm down?
No, actually, that report is false. What happened is I was escorted off the property by a so-called higher up from GM. Because I had my firearm, not to go get checked out. When the police was there, and of course they told me before, to put my hands on the wall so they can get my firearm, make sure everything's legit. And then as the officer was doing that to me, he's like, man, you may have saved this woman's life, good job. But then this guy comes out of nowhere and says, this guy needs to be escorted off property. He shouldn't have had his gun here. This is a gun-free zone. If he's ever caught back here, he'd be charged with trespassing, and that would kind of I don't know. I didn't know what to feel then. I'm like, oh my God, I mean, this lady would have been dead if I didn't do it. Then I'm thinking, did I do the right thing? Am I going to lose my job? Now what's going to happen, you know? Mm. But at that point, then as I was coming home, like I could get another job. And I've been in this parking, regardless, I can get another job. But this lady, literally, there was going to be no one else to intervene. She would have been dead right on those front doorsteps.
Wow.
And so it kind of hit you. You're like, you know what? You know, all things aside, I'm glad I did what I did, regardless of what happens.
Yep. I call my wife right away, and she's, you know, she kind of noticed like how my voice is shaking. She's like, are you okay? Do you need to pull over? Well, I'll come get you. I was like, no, I'm driving home. And she said the same thing. She said, don't worry about, you save someone's life. Hopefully, at that point, I didn't even know if she was going to make it through, you know.
Right.
She rushed to the hospital right away. But at least at that point, you know, my wife calmed me by saying, you know, you gave her a chance, you know.
Yeah. How soon was it after the incident and law enforcement arrived that this higher up, as you called him, came down and said, you know, you needed to be escorted off? How long did that take? I'm just curious.
Once the police officer it was a whole team of officers there quickly, you know, so some people were getting interviewed and they're saying, you know, the people that witnessed it, come on this side, the people that didn't. I would say a good 4 minutes maybe as he was talking. And then when I guess this gentleman, when he saw my hands on the wall with the firearm, he figured, you know, at that point that I had a gun on me. And, you know, people said, well, this guy pulled out his gun to help her. And and he decided, you know, I violated a gun-free zone policy. I mean, that was the last thing I was worried about at that point.
Gotcha. Were you aware of any so-called gun-free zone policy?
No, I was. When we moved over to December, we didn't sign anything. I wasn't aware of anything. I mean,
no signs?
Not that I paid attention to.
Sure.
Yeah. It does sound like there was security just inside the main entrance of the building. Is that what I heard from you earlier?
There's security at the desk, about two of them, and there's a lot of security. That's a huge campus. I believe
right.
It's over almost 2 square miles.
Oh wow!
So I mean, that was the main entrance. So that's like the VEC, like kind of like where all the guests, the tourists, the engineers, and everything come through.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and so then like security at the entrance, are they actually like screening for weapons of people that come in, or are they just kind of there just to be presence?
It's a presence.
Okay, I was just curious. So I'm curious a little bit more too. So 911 is called. Police arrive, and you said that they had you up against the wall with your hands on the wall or something. Is that what you said? And
well, you know, I had my hoodie back on, so my firearm wasn't showing. So the officer said, "Who was the gentleman that pulled out the gun?" And I said, "Me." And they said, "Okay, can you put your hands on the wall and let me know where your firearm is?" I said, "Yeah, it's on my right waist." And then he said, you know, asked for my credentials. I said, in my back right pocket is my license at EPO.
Yep. And so did they actually confiscate the weapon from you at that time?
At that time, yeah. And they, you know, unloaded it. And then they had to check if it was registered to me, et cetera, et cetera.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Yep. What kind of holster were you carrying it in? I'm
also Phobos.
Oh, okay. Sure. Cool.
Yeah. So
nice inside waistband?
No, outside.
Outside. Okay.
It was a Kydex Phobos holster.
Gotcha. So they disarm you. They check your credentials. Do they keep the gun as evidence at that point, or do they return it to you at some point?
No. As they were once everything was under order and everything checked out, I gave my statement. Then as they were escorting me out, he handed me my weapon and just told me, you know. He gave me his card if there was anything, you know, he can do, and if I had any questions.
Mm.
I think they felt bad as well. The officers felt bad even escorting me out. You know, yeah. I felt like a criminal. I felt like the criminal at one point. And I think a lot of those guys, they felt bad for me too, you know?
Uh-huh. Sure.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Do you think, like in hindsight, Do you reflect back on this and think about any like training, like classes you've taken, any training you've done? Do you think any of that had a part in like preparing you as far as how you reacted?
Oh, definitely, most definitely. I try to go to the range at least once a week, if not at least like twice a month, you know, just to set my form, just to have proper training. I got a Springfield 9mm as well, just like if you ever had jams, which that Springfield, I probably put 5,000 rounds, but I've never had a single jam. I go to the range a lot. I always work on my form and, you know, just target practice.
Yeah. So a lot of that was muscle memory. I mean, one of the main things I'm taking from your story is, you know, you had developed a great amount of muscle memory. I mean, once a week, twice a month, that's pretty frequent over the course of 5-6 years. And so you had a great deal of muscle memory. So when that incident happened, that half second, you know, it was pure instinct based on those years of training, right? Well, I mean, do you think that's fair?
Most definitely. And then I want to emphasize how important it is that the trainers, the people that offer the class, the CPL classes, I think the trainer and the teacher makes such a difference, because this guy, as like I said, as he was a military guy, he emphasized a lot, you know, like he emphasized when you want to use lethal force, you know, distance between them, distance between this, and like, he really went into very detail and he was very thorough, and I enjoyed the class, and I think, you know, a lot of people, I don't know how a lot of people really react, but I think that training was one of the most important parts of how the situation, I mean, got to say the lady didn't have to die, and the mother survived, and, you know, you feel like you, two people are alive today. I account that to my teacher that, you know, I took the CPL class from as well.
Mm.
Yeah.
Awesome.
In the aftermath, were you contacted again by law enforcement?
Contact. That's when the media wanted to get my information, and I guess they couldn't release it without my authorization.
Mm-hmm.
So, and then the next time I was contacted was by the mayor of Warren.
Oh, wow. Were you ever afraid that you might have done anything wrong or anything like that?
No, because back to the teacher, you know, I really, even after that, I always looked into what my rights are, because every state is different, and I didn't want to ever be in a position where I would be able to lose this right, you know, that I have. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, like I told you, my family, my wife's from New York, so I happen to go to New York a lot, and which I hate. I know why I hate, because they don't do reciprocals for any state, I believe. Especially, they won't honor a Michigan CPL. Like, if I got caught with my firearm in New York City, you know, I would lose my license and probably be charged with the firearm.
Yeah.
I try to stay up to date with all the laws, all the rules, you know, and, you know, I try to be informed. And, you know, like you said, this firearm training is like you never have enough. You know, it's always something you can learn.
Talk a little bit about your experience with the media, like, you know, reporters, people contacting you, or even, you know, people like us. Like, you know, what was it like dealing with all the attention and you know, what was your general feeling from these kinds of people?
Once the first interview happened, like our local news, all three of them literally came like within 30 minutes to each other. And then after that, you know, I got my story out, and I actually turned off my phone for the next 2 days, because I was just getting calls and from everywhere, you know? And I don't know. It was still bugging me for a while.
Bugging you like how?
I don't know. I mean, it was an experience that I've never felt. You know, it was something I never felt before. I mean, it's hard to explain. Like, when you think about just everything, just this woman being stabbed over and over, and, you know, all that just kept playing back in my head.
Yeah.
Was this the first time you'd seen something that violent?
Yes.
Yeah. So a lot of that is the impact. It's kind of, you're reliving it over, right? Could you, I mean, kind of almost like trying to wipe it from, did you want to wipe that from your memory? Like, you didn't want to have to see that?
I mean, it played. I mean, like the first day and two, you know, I didn't sleep much. You know, I smoked a lot of cigarettes. You know, it was just like, I don't know why I was just like anxious. You know, it's like a lot of anxiety, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Yeah, totally.
Tell us a little bit more about the community's response. You mentioned the mayor called. Talk about, you know, that and kind of what that led to and anything else relative to kind of the way the community responded.
Oh, the community was great, man. I mean, the support from everyone, literally, once the mayor called and he said he thanked me. He said, at least this woman has been rushed to the hospital. But I mean, being stabbed 9 times, who knows, that 10th time may have done the trick and she would have been dead. So, you know, by her forcing her to drop that knife at that point gave her a chance. And I mean, the support was great. My wife tells me, go on Facebook. I mean, there's people over there that's so supportive of you. People are talking, you know, if GM fires this guy, we'll boycott GM. And what are they thinking? You know, the support was great. I mean, I got Facebook, just like you guys, you know, messages from everyone, you know, telling me thank you. You know, one thing that, like, I didn't really like, or not, I wouldn't say like, but, like, when people said, like, congratulations, like, that, I don't know, that just didn't sit well with me. Like, the thank yous are cool, but the congratulations is, I feel like, I mean, I helped her, but, like, you know, do you get what I'm trying to say?
Yeah, like, it's not like you won an award, right? You felt like, I don't want to put words in your mouth, but it, kind of this sense of, you know, someone is hurt, someone was bleeding. Did I win something, or was it just, I did my job?
Yeah, I did what I would expect. I mean, any normal human being, if you see someone being attacked, you know, to step up, you know, and at least do. And the other thing I would say that really bugged me is this was about a week later. Once the mayor took me and my family in and gave me the mayor's award. And that's the day they actually released the live footage of the incident. And what bugged me is one of the reporters asked, like, so what do you tell your kids about this? And, like, did you think about them? That's when it really kind of hit me, like, wow, you know, I really never, at that point, I didn't even have that chance, you know, but, like, if this woman attacked me or if you got hurt, I said, you know what? I mean, I think my kids would, if something were to happen to me and I went to try to help someone, I think my kids would be proud of me. You know, yeah, they would be sad and upset they lost their dad, but I think at the end of the day, and I tell them, someone needs help, you help them. You know, we don't look at, you know, who's, you know, a lot of, like right now, another thing about my background, you know, born and raised Muslim as well. And, you know, Muslim, a lot of people are trying to say, like, all of us are bad. But at that time, it's not like I said, like, hey, you know, let me check if this woman is Christian or Muslim or whatnot. You know, human is human. You know, we all bleed red. We all bleed the same, you know?
Yeah, yeah. Tell anything else like specific to the aftermath, like, you know, now that weeks and months, you know, almost 4 months, more than 4 months have gone by, how does it get easier or how does it get changed or how does it kind of get better for you?
It gets easier. Like, you know, like they say, time heals things. Now that I know that she's alive, she's doing good. Actually, one of her nieces reached out to me through Facebook Messenger and gave me a deep thanks from her. You know, she's older female, so she's probably not very familiar with social media and stuff. So yeah, her niece sent me. She said my aunt wants to thank you. She's hoping to see you and thank you herself personally, face to face. You know, so you know those things made the aftermath much easier to deal with.
What if anything would you change? Like, if you could go back and change anything you did, is there anything you would change? Hard question, I know.
No,
that might be the hardest one we've asked him yet.
yeah, that was. What would I change?
Or anything you learned from the experience?
It's a good one. I'm trying to think deep.
How about this? I'll let you keep thinking, but let me add to that, or maybe phrase it a little bit differently. Is there, if you could tell the listeners of the Concealed Carry podcast, you know, anything, give them any sort of message, what would you tell them?
Train. always train. You know, train and always be ready. You know, like, you never know when danger is gonna hit. I mean, like I said, this was just a regular day, just like past 30 years, I mean, of my life. You know, it's just a regular day, and you just never know when something's gonna happen. Especially the world we live in today. People are just going nuts. You know, you never know when you're gonna be ready. I mean, I learned a lot of things, like, you know, even when I go grocery shopping, like, I learn not to, if I'm gonna be on my phone, I'm gonna talk with my left hand. You know, I always wanna keep my you know, I'm a righty, so I always try to keep my right hand free, because you never know. A lot of, and I look at that stuff when I go to grocery, like, females, which I'm even more saddened about, is like, you know, you'll see these females walk in and one hand is holding grocery, one hand is on the phone, and like, they just make themselves easy targets, you know. So I try to, like, focus myself and always being ready, you know. Like, if something were to happen, I try to keep my arm free where I can go for my firearm, and, you know, just little things. There's so much things that we can always learn how to do better, you know.
Wise words.
Yeah, the best thing would be just always stay alert of your surroundings.
Yeah, good tip. Tell us a little bit more about your employer's reaction. Obviously, we heard a little bit about how GM felt, but GM is not your employer, correct? Talk a little bit about your employer's reaction.
I'm employed through SP Plus. They didn't give official. They didn't really know anything what was going on at that point, because, like I said, it all happened so fast. So, I mean, it went to social media, like, instantly. So then, you know, the media came to my house. And then after I gave my interviews, you know, I told my wife, you know, I'm just going to take a nap now. Then I woke up and I saw I have, like, 2-3 voicemails from my company. But then I, you know, I called back. And they, so I went into my meeting the next day. And they didn't tell me that I was fired. They're like, you know, you're not employed through GM, so GM doesn't have authority to terminate you. But through our company, we're just going to put you on suspension with pay till the investigation is complete.
Wow. That's actually really remarkable. I mean, really, your company had your back.
Yeah.
As far, you know, that's really cool. I mean, to suspend you with pay, I think that's pretty generous. I would imagine there's many companies that wouldn't have gone quite that far. So,
right.
Do you still work there?
At the tech center? No, actually, once it all cleared, GM welcomed me back. And I think the mayor and the public support had a lot to do with that. So they welcomed me back. Actually, a lot of the high GM guys came and, you know, they thanked me for intervening and helping. But they did also know that now you know that not to have your firearm in this.
Sure. Even if it means saving someone's life, huh?
One guy did say, which I liked, he said, if anyone decides they want to search you or your vehicle, you call me right away, because I don't want you to start getting harassed by, you know, random security just because you had a firearm, you know?
Mm. Cool.
But I'm not there now. I mean, I went back after, and then actually my old job, downtown by, like, you know, Ford Field and Comerica, by the stadiums, they called me and wanted me to go promote me back to the facility manager running all the parking over there.
Oh, wonderful. Yeah. Cool, man. Well, they saw how good of a man you are, that, you know, and they know you're packed, so they wanted you over there to protect and defend, right? Well, that's awesome.
The people's been great, man. Even at the cigar, you know, I go to the cigar bar, you know, people, especially, you know, pro gun rights, people that carry, you know, they notice me right away from the beard. They're like, man, I know you. I saw you on the news, man. I knew that beard and that haircut right away. They said, was that you? I was like, yeah, that was me. So, it's led to a couple of free cigars, you know, cigar on me, cigar on this person.
That's nice. Do they call you a hero?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I get that a lot. I don't look at myself a hero. I just did what anybody would do, or I would hope anybody would do, you know?
Yeah. Well,
if I was
to
in
me,
that position, I would hope someone helped me.
To me, Paco, you are a hero, sir. And every bit, you know, you deserve that title. So
From the concealed carry community, at least from myself and for Riley, I think we would just say thank you. I know you've been told thank you, and we've said it before. Not just for what you did, but also for being willing to tell the story, because I think your story is inspirational in the sense that people can learn from it. And I think that your willingness to tell the story really will benefit others. And so thank you for that as well.
Yeah.
Oh, you're welcome. I would have did it earlier, but you know, when you guys called me, like literally, what was it, like 3-4 days after incident, and just wanted things to calm down a lot. Like even I got a state representative that messaged me that wanted to take me to the Capitol to, you know, kind of do what the mayor did. And, you know, I told him I appreciate it, but like, I just kind of really want to go back like to normal society, you know?
Yeah.
I was a really spotlight kind of guy.
I also wanted to say too, that thank you for not just what you did, but to add to Jacob's words, thank you for also being honestly a good example to gun carriers, concealed carriers, and just the overall public. You know, I think you were a wonderful example in your demeanor and the way you've handled things. So I appreciate it very much. So, wow, Jacob, what a powerful story. And as you said, I think there is certainly many things that our listeners can learn from. And Paco, we thank you for coming on and visiting with us and sharing that story and spending a part of your Saturday with us to do that.
No problem, Riley. Hey, cool. we're all one family, you know? A lot of people won't understand us gun carriers.
Yep.
That's right.
Yep.
They look at us like we're all just out there just, you know, trying to be macho or whatnot. But at the end of the day, all we're just trying to do is protect our family, protect our fellow man, you know?
Yeah. Quite a story there, Jacob. Man.
Yeah, I think that, you know, we drug that out quite a bit, not on purpose, but just because there's so much valuable detail and insight that comes from that. The majority of the people listening to this will probably never have an incident like that. But the value and the insights that you can derive from hearing from somebody who's actually had to live through that is, in my opinion, hugely valuable, and I think goes a long way to helping us really understand what that's going to be like.
Priceless. One word for it. And folks, you heard it right here on the Concealed Carry Podcast. So today's episode is sponsored by our very own USA Firearm Training's American Gun Law course. What would you pay to sit down with an attorney and ask him these pressing questions? Many of the same questions that we've covered today in this interview. There's so much that you don't know and that you don't understand. There's still so much I don't know and I don't understand. But one thing that will definitely help you a long ways in your journey to understanding how the law works where it comes to guns and self-defense is with this 3+ hour online video training course that costs way less than if you were to go and hire an attorney. We spent 2.5 days sitting down with one of the best criminal defense attorneys, asking him to explain and break down the laws, and we recorded it all. This fantastic training is available for pre-order now. Don't delay. The price will go up. USAFirearmTraining.com/AGL. On to picks of the week. Jacob, what's your pick?
Well, I had a lot of people help me move into the new house, and they were all very grateful that I rented a stair climber hand truck, or, you know, a lot of people call them dollies. And I just found some rental place locally who had them. It cost me about $82. And these things, I mean, they're battery runs. So you got to make sure that the battery's charged or whatever. And you literally push a button and it goes up or downstairs for you. You know, you can put it in forward or you can put it in reverse to go downstairs. Life-changing. The gun safe I had to move is about 700 pounds and empty, of course. And so this thing just, I mean, it's huge. I mean, even with the dolly, there's still a good eight of us, you know, trying to manage this thing, you know, into the house and down the stairs or up the stairs or whatever. And I can't even imagine how we would have done it without the hand truck. So, yeah, if you have to move a gun safe or anything else really big and huge and heavy up or down some stairs here in the near future, go rent one of these stair climbers. They're cool. And you can go to YouTube and just type in stair climber hand truck and you'll find endless videos of these things. It's intense.
Huh. That is intense. That's cool. I mean, moving a safe like that by yourself is most people don't dare. You know, they pay somebody to do it.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
You're a brave man.
Or cheap. Or both, yeah.
Yeah. Good job. My pick of this week is the Maglula Uplula.
Oh, yeah. I remember that thing from SHOT Show.
Yeah. Well, and it's honestly, it's been around
for a while. Sure.
Years. Yeah. It's a great product. This is the magazine, you know, loading helper is really what it is. And, you know, a lot of times you'll buy these semi-automatic handguns these days. I mean, Glock does it. Springfield does it. I think Smith & Wesson might have something similar. But, they give you that little, magazine loading device, right, that kind of helps you. You put rounds in the mag. You press downward on the magazine with this device, right? And it holds the round down so you can insert the next. And then you lift up and you push the mag or the round the rest of the way in. Well, the Maglula Uplula takes it kind of to the next level. It is so clever. And it's more ergonomic. It's faster. And not only that, but it works with pretty much anything 9mm to 45 caliber magazines and works with single and double stack magazines as well. So like with the, I got a couple Springfield XDM pistols, right? I've got the 45, I got a 9mm, and they both come with their own, magazine loader. And the 9mm works the same also for the 40, but the 45 one has got to be, it's its own thing. It's totally different. And Glock's the same way. So anyway, the point is this one Maglula Uplula magazine speed loader fits double stack and single stacks, 9mm to 45 caliber. It works so slick and so beautifully. You can find it on Amazon. Actually, that's one of the best places I've found it as far as price goes. I don't think we sell it on our website. Maybe we should. I don't know. Who knows? Maybe we can get it. But I don't know that we can sell it as cheap as what Amazon has it for right now. So there's a link in the show notes. Check it out. If you got to load a high volume of handgun rounds, it's a beautiful thing.
Cool.
Yeah. And so coming up next, Jacob, what you up to?
Well, this afternoon I'm going to spend 5 hours volunteering at the archery part of the Cub Scout camp that my son is attending. So I got to make sure that a bunch of 8 to 11-year-olds don't impale each other.
That's a fun part. In fact, that's my son's favorite part of Cub Scout day camp is the archery range. So,
well, it's 95 degrees out there. So mostly I'm just worried about dying of heat exhaustion.
It is definitely a hot one this week. My coming up next, yes, guess what? Is not any different or changed from last week. I'm going to leave it right there. I am still on the home stretch for the American Gun Law course, trying to finish editing it, putting it together. Kind of got interrupted. I had a funeral I had to attend last weekend, went out of town, got back. We've had a lot of crap going on here at the office, haven't we? I mean, we've had so much volume, both in sales as well as in, customer service requests that literally I'd spend most of my day yesterday just calling people back. Ever since this Orlando thing, it just has been crazy. So, anyway, so it kind of has interrupted a little bit of finishing up the, remainder of the American Gun Law course, but we're getting there. And then I still need to and want to spend a little more time practicing for the regional competition for the American Marksman competition. So there we go. As always, we'd like to encourage you to subscribe to the podcast on your mobile or listening device. This is the surest and easiest way of always having access to the podcast. Don't miss out. Don't delay. Please do it now. And if you visit the podcast on our website now where we post the podcast episodes, which I'm sure we still get quite a few listeners that just listen on the website, it prompts you. It says, hey, by the way, after what, 30 seconds or something, Jacob? It says, subscribe.
Yeah, it just pops right up in your face. Like, are you sure you haven't subscribed yet?
Yeah. So you should do it. And we've tried to make it easy. Both Jacob and I took some time. He uses an Android device. I use an Apple device. We recorded some helpful tutorials to show you how to do that. Those videos are available on our podcast pages. So go check it out. And we thank you again, as always, for following and liking us on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, and YouTube. And we also thank you for the reviews. We'd like to, as we've been doing for the last, several episodes, sharing and giving a shout out to those of you that have been so kind to leave us a review. And this week, I'd like to feature from, I think it's D Label, is his username. He says, "Fantastic podcast. This is a fantastic podcast. So much awesome information every episode. The hosts are great and full of tips and insight that a newbie like me to concealed carry needs to hear. Just like having my own personal CC trainers. Keep the podcasts coming." And I thank you, D-Label. We've been kind of seeing this recently, Jacob. A lot of reviews, we've seen a common thread in them, and that is, I'm a newbie to CCW.
Yeah, we have seen that a lot lately.
So, that's really part of our mission here, or at least my mission, is, I want to help newbies. I want to help you folks, learn how to do this, learn how to carry concealed and do so safely, and also to defend yourself if need be and do so safely and stay out of legal hot water. So anyway, with that, as always, if you'd like to get in touch with us, besides the Facebook or Instagram, Facebook really is best. Facebook, you could send us a message, but you can also email us or contact us via our webpage. We have a contact page there. It's usafirearmtraining.com/contact. And, we get emails every day and we love to hear from you. We'll do our best to help you. So we appreciate it. Bear with us, although right now we are seeing a pretty high volume and demand with just everything that's been going on. So, but we will do our best to get back to you very quickly. So with that, I think we've pretty much covered it all. Awesome episode. We thank Daryl for joining us and doing the interview with us. So with that, we bid you farewell till next week. Jacob?
Hasta la vista. Thanks, listeners.
And so we'll see you. Be safe. Train hard. Take care. Bye-bye. A reminder that laws vary from place to place, and we encourage listeners to seek local legal advice to understand applicable laws. USA Firearm Training and the Concealed Carry Podcast strive to share insights and stories about firearm-related incidents and laws, but things could be different where you live, or laws may have changed by the time you listen to this. We cannot be held liable for your actions based on the information shared in the podcast.